the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is the Local Edition. I'm Kimberly Izar. Thanks so much for being here with me. I'll be your host for this evening's show. We have some great conversations coming up for you. In the second half of the show, we learn more about Sonita Alizada, who escaped child marriage and used music to tell her story. Now a rapper, activist, and author, she spoke with Radio Catskill's Patricio Robayo to talk about her journey. But first, it's Friday, and that's when we chat with our friends over in Ellenville at the Schwagunk Journal. Joining me now on the phone is Schwagunk Journal reporter Chris Rowley. Chris, thank you so much for being here with me.
Hey, it's always good to be here. We've had a very busy week, and it's going to get even busier this weekend. So I wanted to sort of start off here with a discussion of the amazing career of Maud Bruce, who is the president of the local chapter of the NAACP in Ellenville. And she's been there for decades, but has been a sterling servant of that organization. And really, she is a link back to the scary days. She marched as a 16-year-old. She marched with Martin Luther King in Albany in southern Georgia, which was near her hometown, Custer.
Wow.
She marched with him. There was a group of teenagers, 15, 16 of these teenagers from Cuthbert, who went to the march. They were all arrested by the cops in Albany, as was Martin Luther King. They were put in separate cells, but all the kids were put in one cell. They were jammed into a cell all together overnight. Next day they were given food that was, I think, deliberately contaminated with dog hair. They responded by throwing the food on the wall and demanding to be let out. And so her resistance to racist oppression began then, and it continued. And then she moved with her husband up to the north, and eventually ended up in Ellenville, and made a life in Ellenville in our area, with various things that have happened since. But from very early on, she took an interest in the NAACP, National Association to the Advancement of Colored People, and she became the president of the local chapter in the mid-80s, and she's been there ever since. And it's a fairly active chapter. I run into it, all the time when I'm doing stories that affect, impact into that community. They're always there. She is forthright about, situation today is dark and kind of ominous. She is very concerned about where this president and this administration wants to go. It does appear to be that there's an effort between the Supreme Court and state administrations to remove African-Americans' voting power. And there's a case coming up in Louisiana that will be considered again by the Supreme Court that will give the Supreme Court the opportunity to knock out, I think it's Section 2 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. And if they can do that, that's the end of the Voting Rights Act. So we'll have to see. She's saying, look, this is what's going on. And she also made the point that she's not hearing any complaints from our local politicians. That is, at the municipal, village level, the town level. Everyone's staying very quiet about these things. And she's letting everyone know that NAACP ain't happy about that and that the changes are going to come. Anyway, so there was that story. It was interesting and emphatic with her, and she's an amazing lady, and she's going to be honored by Ellenville's Noonday Club in September at a dinner to be held at Honors Haven, where she will be the Citizen of the Year, which is something that the Noonday Club does every year. So she's going to be Citizen of the Year and honored in September.
Oh, that's so great.
Yep.
Another story I know you're working on is some news coming out of the Open Space Initiative in Ulster County. What is the latest here?
Switching across to something that hikers will like. Except that they won't be able to hike onto this land. But another little step forward by the Open Space Institute, which has, I think they spent about $600,000 on this. They bought 291 more acres of land on top of the ridge, up at the northern end of Minnewaska State Park, and it's been added to the park. We're not going to hike there. I mean, it's a little too far away from the roads or civilization. Anyway, it's wild land, wild country, and the ground there is pretty rough. But and there are snakes. So don't take the family. But I got to tell you, the rattlesnakes are very, very sluggish and very polite. If they don't like you, they rattle. They let you know.
they're not shy about it.
They're not shy. They're not Australian snakes. I've had Australians tell me, oh, snakes. Oh, well, Lord. Because, they have the most venomous snakes in the world just about, and they don't give you any warnings. They just, let you have it. Pesticide story. This 291 acres is another addition. But what I liked about this little event was that with it came a rumor, not rumor, no, came advance warning that there's going to be more. OSI always, negotiating with landowners all around in Ulster County, Sullivan County, everywhere, right? They've got this constant thing going. And they're constantly bringing deals to a close and closing. And there's something being closed that will be announced soon, and we'll be back with more from them. It's just wonderful. They've created Minnewaska State Park. They've protected Sam's Point. They've protected land all the way down the ridge. And they're doing it elsewhere, too. They're protecting fragile coastal lands in South Carolina. Mm. They're doing, they're an amazing organization. So that was a nice story. And final thing, just a quick boost for Saturday. If you're not doing anything and you've got family with you, come on down to Ellenville for the Blueberry Festival, which will be, it's been going for quite a while. This is a big fest. There'll be a lot of people. I believe the weather's going to be nice. And we'll be there. Shungum Journal will be out there with our table and hoping to get more people with subscriptions. And we're also raising our price. Unfortunately, we have to. It's been years since we did, so the Shungum Journal is going up to $2. What can you say? Inflation is what it is, and everything's gotten more expensive, and we have no choice. We got to do that. And but come on down, say hello, and we'll be there and enjoy full blown out Ellenville Canal Street experience of people, and stalls up and down selling all kinds of strange stuff. Yeah.
And the Blueberry Festival, that's going to be this Saturday, August 9th, 9 to 4 p.m., correct?
Yeah, the peak time is around noon or whatever. I would say to anybody who hasn't been there before and doesn't know, you want to take a good look at the map and plan your parking, plan where to park.
Great. I'm on the website of the chamber, and I see that there's a blueberry muffin contest.
Oh, yes, there'll be a blueberry muffin contest. Yes.
Oh, how fun. Okay.
Yeah, it is a celebration of blueberries, and it's a reminder that back before World War II, there were still people who made a living in the summer by harvesting wild blueberries up on the ridge, and people lived up there the whole summer. I did an interview piece with some people, a long time ago now, who went were dragged off the mountain as kids and forced to go to school in New York City. And then they were, regimented, forced to scrub themselves, put on shoes, and sit at desks and learn their letters and their numbers, you know, and that was a shocking and horrifying experience. But
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. It was interesting. And, of course, they, you know, they became kind of somewhat normal people. They were living back here and everything else, but and they didn't go up onto the ridge much themselves anymore because they were elderly. But and, you know, it was there. And there's still the ruins of Berry Picker Shack by Stamps Point along one of the trails where people, you know, came in the summertime and stayed for months and harvested blueberries, which went down to the city and were served up in restaurants. Yeah, that was a thing. That was a thing before World War II.
Huh, a little piece of local blueberry history. I love that. I've been chatting with reporter Chris Rowley from the Shuagang Journal. You can find all of Chris's reporting on the journal's website. That's at shuagangjournal.com. Chris, thank you so much for being here with us. We will catch you next week.
Okie dokie.
We'll take a short break, but when we come back, Patricio Robayo chats with Sonita Alizada about escaping forced marriage. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
For years, teams inside of Uber have tested tools that they found were effective at making trips safer. But the company didn't warn passengers about the factors that it linked to attacks.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Hey, it's Cassie from Rare Pair Radio, playing you the fruit of all things sweet, Fridays, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., mostly female artists, from rock, funk, punk, pop, and more. All rare, only on WJFF Radio Catskill.
Radio station in, just turn it on, y'all be gone.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. I'm Kimberly Izar. Sonita Alizada is a rapper, activist, and author who escaped child marriage and turned her story into a platform for change. Born in Afghanistan and raised in Iran, she used music to speak out, and her viral song, quote, Daughters for Sale, end quote, brought international attention to the issue of forced marriage. Now a graduate of Bard College and a Rhodes Scholar heading to Oxford, Sonita shares her journey in a new memoir, Sonita, My Fight Against Tyranny and My Escape to Freedom. Radio Catskill's Patricio Robayo talks with Sonita about her music, her advocacy, and the power of finding your voice.
Every year, millions of girls are forced into marriage. Among them was Sonita Alizada, who at 10 years old was sold into marriage. When that fell through, she was nearly sold again, this time for $9,000. But Sonita refused to be silenced. She escaped that fate and went on to use her voice as a weapon of resistance. And she's been featured on CNN, NPR, and Time. And in October, she heads to Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar. So today, Sonita, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
First of all, congratulations on becoming a Rhodes Scholar and heading over to Oxford. That's awesome.
I look forward to that. So I'm preparing, actually. These are a few days I have, I'm preparing for the visa to get ready and go.
Yeah, definitely. So let's start with your story first. If you could bring listeners into your world, can you take us back to what life was like for you as a young girl in Afghanistan and then in Iran?
In Afghanistan, being a girl is always difficult. That should be the first thing to mention. And it can be also easy sometimes because you're not aware of other countries, what other people have, what kind of life, what kind of opportunities they have. So because you don't know, you're also okay with what you have. So sometimes I was in that situation. I was okay as long as they could let me go outside to play, just like every kid would want to do. And sometimes they wouldn't let me. I would find a way, like wearing my brother's clothing, going outside to fit in with boys and be safer. And then going to Iran, we had to leave Afghanistan because of war, because of poverty. So when we were told that Iran was the best place to go to, when we got there, it was nice. The beginning when we arrived, even though the journey was very risky for us. But when we got there, when I saw kids my age, girls going to school, it really opened my eye and it became my biggest dream to one day wear their uniform and go to school to learn how to read and write as well. And after a few weeks, months, it became really hard for us because we are Afghans and in Iran, racism was crazy. And today it's still happening today. So I couldn't have friends. Whoever I wanted to play with, they called me dirty Afghani and never had the opportunity really to feel like I was accepted where I was living. But I was lucky that an Iranian woman, she became friends with me and she told me that she could be my teacher even though she was not allowed to teach Afghan kids even a word. And that's the reason why I could read and write because of someone from Iran became friends with me. She was very sweet and then I learned. So that was the journey in Iran.
Now, you know, I mentioned in the beginning that, you know, you were first, you know, you were sold into marriage or attempted to be sold into marriage. When you were first told that, do you remember that time and how did it felt being told that?
The first time I was happy. I was very excited because of all the goods I received, all the attention I got, new clothing, new shoes. And I didn't have a role model around me. Our neighbors, everyone got married at such a young age. So for me, that also became a goal for the future. But at age 16, this was completely a nightmare for me to get married. Because at that age, I knew what I wanted to be in the future. I had seen enough. I had seen my sisters coming with bruises on their faces because they didn't want to get married and who they married wasn't the right match for them. And then seeing my classmates fighting for their freedoms every day. And then it was my turn at age 16. So it was all building up. I didn't know what to do, who to go to, because whenever I went to my family asking for help, they said, don't speak. Your brothers or your parents will decide for you because you're a girl. You don't know much.
Wow. So you were able to escape the second forced marriage through the power of your voice. Do you want to talk a little about that and how did the idea to write and record Daughters for Sale come out of that?
I tried many different ways to speak up, to share stories, starting with poetry, pop music. And then one day I went to a gym where I used to work as a cleaner. I heard Eminem rapping. Obviously, I didn't know what he was saying. But I felt the anger in his voice. And when I started rapping over his beat, it felt so right. So I decided to use rap as a tool for me to share stories. So I, with the help of an Iranian filmmaker, Rokhsar Qaymeghami, I created Daughters for Sale, which is about what happened to me as a child marriage survivor and what happened to my friends who could not escape this fate. And then we put it on YouTube. I wasn't expecting anything crazy. I thought only my three fans at school could hear it and maybe the teachers. But then it went viral. It was being played on national TV in Afghanistan. And soon me and Rokhsar, we received a lot of calls from other countries. And then I received a full scholarship to go to the US, to go to school for the first time in my life. So music and the support of others saved my life to escape child marriage.
Yeah. Now, when you put it on YouTube, wasn't that a risky thing to do? Even just making the video, especially at this time, I think you were living in Iran at this time.
That's
okay.
True.
Especially, Yeah, especially that, you know, when women weren't, you know, from what I understand, women aren't allowed to sing solo. Were you afraid of the whole process of putting it on YouTube or anything like that?
Sure, I was committing two crimes at the same time, being an undocumented refugee in Iran, and at the same time singing, rapping. So it was very risky, but I was only thinking about the possibilities, the options I had in front of me, which were not many. And knowing that I put everything that I wrote on YouTube, and I wasn't aware that anyone in the world could see it. So when that happened, I was happy and also sad, because I was happy that people will hear me eventually, and sad because I didn't want my family to know that I was doing music, something that is haram in my culture and my family. But knowing it's always obvious that whatever you fight for, whatever you deserve, it also has a price. So I accepted that and did music.
Well, what has been the reaction from your family, from your brothers and sisters, your parents?
The beginning, it was my brothers were all disappointed. When I shared Daughters for Sale, my mom called me. I was expecting to hear a lot of disappointment, but she said, I saw your song. I heard it. It was good. So that changed my entire life, because I never thought she would agree with what I was doing. And now, basically everyone in my family, they're a fan. And sometimes they tell me, they give me ideas what to rap about.
You mentioned, you know, coming to America. It was the group called Stone Strong Heart Group, right? That was able to get you and offer you a path to safety and education in the U.S. How was that experience? You know, you mentioned, I want to make sure I heard this right. You said coming to America and going to school here was the first time you had experience with education, right?
Yeah, that was my first time going to a real school at age 17 or 18. I was super excited, but I got a little bit depressed after a while because I didn't know English. I couldn't speak the language. I didn't know the culture. And one mistake I did, I isolated myself from other people because I couldn't speak. So it was very hard for me, and I was missing my family. I was missing food in Afghan food a lot. But I made good friends eventually who helps me with my homesickness. And I also experienced a lot of shocking moments. Like in the U.S., there are many opportunities for kids, for students, that they don't see it. They take it for granted. Something that I was dying for, like education. I was risking whatever I had to be in their position. I saw that it's taking for granted. No one would appreciate what they have. And the fact that some of them were so unaware of what was going on in other parts of the world, and how many girls could benefit from their voices if they could learn what's happening, for example, in Iran, in Afghanistan, and how these students could give them a chance to share their stories, or to basically help them to also feel that they are being seen, they are being heard, the way I felt in Iran when Rukhsara and the teachers helped me when I needed help. So the whole experience was shocking and also very exciting for me, especially having access to music.
Yeah. And now you graduated from Bard College, and like I said, you're heading to Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar. Did you ever think, you know, back then at 10 years old, 16 years old, that you ever imagined having a life that you have now, being an American now, going to be able to go to Oxford in later this year as a Rhodes Scholar? Did you dream of that life as a kid?
No, but I never imagined I would be in the U.S. to go to school, do music. But I did know that I would do something. I would do a favor for myself and have a different life than my mother, who married at age 12, and my sisters, two of them who were sold into marriage. But I don't know how long it would take me to get there. if I wouldn't have the support of other people.
Yeah. Now, your book, what was the motivation in telling your story in this format, in memoir format? What was the sort of motivation that you wanted to write this book?
I heard that my story inspired many people. Wherever I went, I shared my music, I shared my story on stages. People got back to me telling me that they were inspired, they want to do something. And I decided to write my story as a testament also for Afghan girls that they can also follow their dreams. Even though this situation is very horrible, heartbreaking in Afghanistan. But again, we Afghan people, we know how to hold tight to our dreams and we will eventually find a way. And then I use this moment to write my story for me as a therapy session because I wanted to get everything out. Obviously, it was too difficult for me to go through some moments like child marriage, war, poverty, losing my friend in war. So there were many parts I never wanted to go to revisit because they make me just cry all day. But it feels good that everything is documented now. And so far, people have been learning something from my story that even in the darkest moment, there is a spark of hope and we should not give up.
Yeah. Looking ahead here, Sunita, thankfully, you didn't stop dreaming. And so I wanted to ask you, what are your dreams now for the future, both for yourself and for the girls and for girls around the world and girls who are living in Afghan or Iran?
For myself, I don't know if this is big or small, but my dream is to have an album finally that I could record with professional producers because music is very costly and I don't have the budget to spend creating pieces that I have in my mind. And for my future, for the future of girls, women around the world, I am hoping first for Afghan women and Iranian women to gain the freedom, the little freedom that they had and the achievements that they made during the 20 years that they had. And after Oxford, my hope is that I will be able to return to my home country, to Afghanistan, to work in the government and to see how I can help my country because I do believe the Taliban will not be able to stay in power in Afghanistan. Or if they want to stay, they have to change their ideology because the new generation in Afghanistan, they're not going to obey everything that the Taliban say. And that is because of the power of internet that they know what they want, what their rights are.
Yeah, the world has opened up to them. Definitely. Sunita, thank you so much for joining me. I'm reading your memoir. I'm halfway through. It's been a powerful read. And you said to advocate, you want folks to learn. And I'm learning a lot about your culture and what you went through your memoir. So thank you so much for talking to me. We'll talk to Sunita Alizada, who has wrote a book or memoir called Sunita, My Fight Against Tyranny and My Escape to Freedom, which is available now. So thank you so much for talking to me. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks to Patricio for that report. I'm Kimberly Izar, and that's all for the local edition. Be sure to catch me tomorrow on Farming Country, your window into rural life in the Catskills and the Upper Delaware Valley, here on Radio Catskill at 10 a.m. But stay with us tonight. We have a great Friday night lineup of local music shows, starting with Jason Tugau and The Mixtape at 7, and Rare Pair Radio with Cassie Carlson at 8. This is Radio Catskill. Have a great night, y'all.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org and from listeners like you.
The White House asked Congress to pull back federal funding for public media that had already been approved, and Congress has gone along. We want you to know that NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and hopefully enriching your life in other ways. But without federal funding, we're relying on your support now more than ever. Please make your gift to this station today. Here's how.
Give now at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
This is Callison Stratton, host